A few years ago, a University of California psychologist named Paul Piff conducted a series of studies on the connection between people's ethical behavior and their wealth. And what he found through these studies is that people tend to behave less ethically as our relative financial status rises. Paul Piff began this series of studies by paying attention to people's behavior behind the wheel of a car, which I think is an unfair place to start, personally. But it's where he began, nevertheless. Now, it seems that in California, as in most states, you are required by law to stop at a pedestrian crosswalk if there's a pedestrian there. And so what Paul Piff did is he placed various numbers of researchers at different intersections and crosswalks to pay attention to people's behavior and whether they stopped as the law requires for pedestrians. And he discovered that an overwhelming majority of drivers, close to 90%, did in fact stop for pedestrians in these crosswalks. But of the remaining 10% who didn't stop, the overwhelming majority of that 10% were driving luxury cars. And in fact, he found that drivers of luxury cars were, on the whole, nearly as likely to just simply run through the intersection as to wait for the pedestrian in the crosswalk. In a different experiment, Piff and his team put study participants into a room by themselves. And before closing the door to the room and leaving them alone in the room by themselves, the researcher who was facilitating that experiment would offhandedly tell the participant to help themselves to some of the wrapped candies that were sitting in a bowl on the table in the middle of the room. And then also mention in a rather offhanded way, "But just so you know, what other candies are left over, we're going to give to some children in another room down the hall. So, you know, just so you know." And the study was done with hundreds and hundreds of people. And overwhelmingly, it was the wealthiest participants in this study who helped themselves to the children's candy. He did experiment after experiment. And in all of them, Piff found that people who have more financial wealth tend to behave less ethically, tend to think of themselves first. Now, in order to probe these initial findings further, Piff tried to figure out, okay, so what comes first? Is it the money or is it the unethical behavior? And so he created this ingenious experiment that involved a game of Monopoly. Actually, I should say, a rigged game of Monopoly. And both players know outright that the game of Monopoly is rigged. It is no secret. Both of the players who are study participants each time they play this experiment out know quite up front that the rules are overwhelmingly in favor of one over the other. They get more money to start with, and a number of the rules for playing the game seriously and critically advantage that same player over the other. And they both know this outright. And what Piff found in staging this rigged game of Monopoly hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times is that even though both players know clearly and outright that the game is rigged, the winner still behaves more rudely and selfishly. Piff and his fellow researchers performed this experiment with all sort and manner of different types of people, including specifically and intentionally a number of people from different rungs on the socioeconomic ladder. Okay, so he wanted to make sure that different people at different income levels are represented. And he found that it didn't matter. Whether you are rich or poor in, quote, real life, when placed within the bounds of this rigged game of Monopoly, the winner consistently behaved arrogantly. Now, in follow-up interviews, the researchers asked the participants in this study how it is that they felt during the game. They wanted to sort of get down, to mine down on what it is that was going on in the heads of these participants. And consistently the player who had been assigned into this wealthier, more advantaged role in the rigged game of Monopoly commonly reported feeling somehow entitled to win. They said they felt like they deserved it. Somehow, their advantaged circumstances, regardless of the fact that it was totally clearly unfair, that it was totally clearly all pretend, resulted in a diminishment of empathy and an increase of self-centeredness. According to Piff in the study, wealth then has the possibility to corrupt our attitudes and behaviors. Today we heard Jesus tell one of the strangest of all of his parables, one that no matter how many times I read it, I still am not entirely sure what he's talking about. It still doesn't make sense. And every time it comes up in the lectionary, I go back to the biblical commentaries thinking someone somewhere has figured out what's going on there, and nobody has. But I think Jesus, in this strange and enigmatic parable, gives us a hint about its meaning at the end. He helps us understand what he's talking about by the way he finishes. Whoever is faithful in a very little, he says, is faithful also in much. And whoever is honest in a very little is also dishonest in much. No slave can serve two masters, for a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. Paul Piff's study reveals the humbling truth of Jesus' teaching. Our wealth wants us to serve it. And as a result, it changes us. It causes us to behave as though we are somehow entitled to it, as though somehow we deserve it, as though somehow it makes us better people. St. Augustine is supposed to have once said that God gave us people to love and things to use, but original sin causes us to conflate the two, loving things and using people. That is the danger of wealth. Wealth can all too easily lead us to a distorted type of vision, so that everything we see in the world begins and ends back with ourselves. We can begin to think that we deserve it, that we are somehow entitled to it. And pretty soon that attitude tricks us into feeling like, you know, we're entitled to other things too, like the bowl of candy, you know, the wrapped candies. The children could have it, but I think it's for me. Or it can trick us into speeding right through the crosswalk, or worse. But here's the thing. I don't think Jesus was only concerned about people who already possess a tremendous amount of financial wealth when he teaches us all these things. Jesus seemed to understand the lesson revealed with Paul Piff's study. That is, that we can all very quickly succumb to the temptation of believing that what we have is ours, that it exists primarily for us, for our contentment and our fulfillment and our personal gratification. We can all wind up at all of the very real life games of Monopoly and suddenly begin to act out in them in selfish ways, because the temptation to love our wealth and to use our neighbors instead of the other way around is a temptation that can overwhelm anyone. Jesus tells us again and again that we live for relationship. We exist, we were made for relationship with God first and foremost, and through God to be able to enjoy and be in relationship with everyone else, the whole world. That is the essence of the good life, the truly abundant and holy life that Jesus invites us all to experience. And that is why again and again Jesus calls those of us who would be his followers to give away our wealth. Because giving our lives away, our money and our time and our talent, is the way that we begin to counter the poisonous human tendency of believing that we are entitled to our money, that we deserve it, that it's ours. Giving our lives away, our money and our time and our talent, is the way that we begin to embrace the powerful truth that we were made for relationship, that we were made to be loved and to love others. Giving our lives away, our money, our time, our talent, is the way we reject the ideals of the world and the constant temptation to love our wealth and to use our neighbors rather than to love our neighbors and to use our wealth. So I began by telling you about one scientific study, and I want to finish by telling you about another. Several years ago, a team of social scientists in Spain put together pairs of children in a closed room and told them that they would be given a snack. Now, sitting in front of each of these children in the room was a plate, a covered dish. And the researcher would tell the children they're going to have a snack, and then the researcher would leave, and the children would uncover the dish in front of them. And when the children lifted the covers off of their plates, one child unveiled it to discover an entire peanut butter sandwich sitting there on the plate. And the other child would pull off the lid of their covered dish and there would be nothing. The plate would be empty. And there are videos of this experiment, and you can literally see the delight in the face of each child who receives the sandwich. And you can also literally see the disappointment and confusion on the face of the child who unveils their dish and discovers nothing at all. Now remember, this entire experiment is totally staged and arbitrary. The children have done nothing at all to earn or deserve whatever it is that they receive. Now what the social scientists discovered is that in almost every single instance, case after case, time after time, the kids solved the problem. The child with the sandwich realized that in order for both of them to enjoy the snack, he had to share. And as the sandwich is torn into two mangled pieces, the delight on the faces of both of the children is evident. It seems that children are less encumbered than adults by St. Augustine's dilemma. They know how to love people and use things. In the words of Jesus, they know how to show their faithfulness even in very little. They are a living reminder to all of us that deep down we all know how to live. Deep down we all know how to give. Deep down we all know who to serve. So as you head back out into the monopoly board of your life, Jesus wants to know, are you ready to share your sandwich? And all of God's people said,